This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's Wild Oil of Oregano supports a variety of healthy benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. As usual, the subject du jour, and it will be for quite some time, is the coronavirus. And today we're going to talk to a Stanford professor and physician, Dr. Greg Hammer, who's going to talk to us about some of the risk factors that can adversely affect our health during this coronavirus crisis. He's author of a book entitled Gain Without Pain. He's a pediatric intensive care physician, as well as a pediatric anesthesiologist. And he's a professor at Stanford University Medical Center. And his initiative, in addition to being an intensivist and working with kids, is on the Wellness Committee for the American Society of Anesthesiologists. And he's also part of the Stanford WellMD initiative. We're going to find out more about that, but it has to do with optimizing the well-being and productivity and continued viability of our healthcare professionals, which I think is an especially important consideration during this time of extraordinary stress. He is author of Gain Without Pain, the Happiness Handbook for Healthcare Professionals, which will be released soon in May of this year. Greg, it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be with you, Ron.
So you are at Stanford University. What's the situation out there in Northern California? Are you getting slammed, or have you yet to receive the first wave of the tsunami out there?
Well, we've certainly been doing everything possible to prepare for a surge. Fortunately, and I was just looking online at the Santa Clara County site for the number of coronavirus cases in the county, which would include Stanford, and I think that sheltering in place has had a significant effect on bending the curve, flattening it out. It looks like in Santa Clara County, we've had about the same number of cases, new cases as of yesterday, as we had about 10 days ago. So it kind of went up and then came back down. There's been a little bit of revolving around the mean. But related to that, at Stanford, we have not been severely impacted yet. We're certainly making preparations for that. At the Children's Hospital, we've only had one COVID-positive patient.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering about that because, that there's really kind of an exception to the rule is that the younger you are, the less likely you are to be vulnerable to this. And many viral diseases will affect the elderly, but also at the other end of the curve will affect the vulnerable young. And the good news about this epidemic, if there is any, is that it hasn't really affected kids that much.
Yes, that is definitely the good news. And so things are a little bit different at the Children's Hospital than at the Adult Hospital, which is right next door. But at Stanford University Hospital, I think we've had a census of about 12 to 15 patients, and half to two-thirds of those are in the intensive care unit. The majority of those are intubated. We are intubating patients early on in the course. We're not using the usual array of so-called non-invasive respiratory adjuvants like CPAP and BiPAP and high-flow nasal cannula. So patients are getting intubated earlier, not because we think it's going to change their course necessarily, but because of decreased contamination to the environment in which they are admitted. So things are not too bad here yet. And time will tell as to how severe things will be. Certainly there's a lot of doomsday press, and I think we have to assume that we will be hit, hopefully not as badly as where you are in Manhattan.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of the media is situated in New York City, and, you know, we're in the midst of a real crush in terms of medical resources and a lot of cases. And I think that the images that people are seeing across the country reflect the situation here, which may not be applicable in, you know, parts of Idaho or Wyoming or, you know, New Mexico, in the so-called hinterland of America, flyover country, where, you know, the cases may be, fortunately, rather sporadic. So I think that that's the good news so far. It may be that, you know, a second wave of this will hit the rest of the country after some of the population centers are on the downward slope of the curve. But certainly people are people where you are walking around with masks and staying home as much as possible, you know, swabbing down packages, taking deliveries instead of going venturing into stores?
People are definitely staying home. The streets are empty. I think probably grocery stores have a variable number of people. I have a great organic grocery store not too far from me, and I've been there once. Excuse me. And it wasn't crowded, and they actually were reasonably well stocked. But I know that other stores, like Trader Joe's, for example, and Safeway have been more crowded. But people are generally staying home. I hope that they're taking all due precaution with regard to disinfecting surfaces, and particularly when they bring things in from outside, like groceries, for example. So people are definitely hunkering down and sheltering in place here. And, you know, so far it looks like that is kind of keeping a lid on things. Let's hope that continues.
Well, you have a lot of colleagues over there at Stanford University Medical Center, and some of them are on the front lines. Maybe some of them are heading to, you know, Metro San Francisco to back up the strained healthcare resources there, because I think they've been hit pretty hard. Are you talking to some of your colleagues, you know, virtually, online, you know, via social media? Are they experiencing enormous strain? Are they working crazy shifts? Are they fearful for their very well-being and the well-being of their family members?
I'm sure everybody is somewhat fearful about spreading the infection, especially with respect to their families. We have town hall meetings almost every day, and so there are quite a number of the faculty on those calls.
Medical town hall meetings. In other words, you're talking to your colleagues.
That's right. So because things are in a state of flux, we are all communicating regularly and getting regular updates from the chairs and so on. And so I think at this point, you know, we have a COVID-19 airway team. Excuse me. So those will be the frontline providers for patients who need to be intubated, for example. It hasn't hit us that hard at this point. So I think people are a little bit on edge, but not yet overwhelmed and having their sleep impacted and working extremely long hours and so on.
They're bracing. Yeah, I know that some of my colleagues here in New York, you know, I'm not on the front lines, fortunately. I kind of paid my dues during the AIDS epidemic. And, you know, I recall how strenuous that was in those days. You know, we didn't even know how the virus was transmitted. And I can recall, and, you know, you sound a little younger than I am, but perhaps you can recall those days. When I wanted to arrange for transport for a patient, I would say, you know, this patient's having breathing difficulty. Let's get him into the elevator and get him down to X-ray and then bring him back. I've got a bunch of patients to take care of here on the floor. The workers at Bellevue, and, you know, I don't blame them. They had no idea what was going on. We were wearing moon suits because we didn't know how it was transmitted. They were afraid to get on the elevator with an HIV patient. So I, you know, as the young intern that I was, you know, I had to, you know, operate the elevator myself, push the gurney myself, bring the patient X-ray, you know, stand there and wait till they got their chest films and bring the patient back up to the floor. This was a time of enormous stress. We were pulling crazy hours. We didn't know what we were up against. And, you know, here, you know, 30 years later, I get it, you know, because it's a war, and it's a war against an adversary that we poorly understand. the risk is death. You know, some of these young health professionals on the front lines, and, you know, we tend to think of this as something that affects the old and the vulnerable, but some of these young, robust individuals are ending up on ventilators themselves, some of them dying.
Absolutely. Well, I was actually a resident at the hospital of the University of Pennsylvania during the period when AIDS was really emerging back in the 80s. So, yes, I had a lot of those same experiences. We didn't know if the virus was going to contaminate the anesthesia machines. We didn't know how to sterilize things. And in fact, I think we're facing some of those same questions now. But it was a crazy time. But I think that even at the worst of it, we did not quite experience the magnitude of this pandemic in terms of what's to come and so on. We didn't have cities that were completely overwhelmed as now.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really a unique experience in our lifetime. Yes,
absolutely. I mean, you know, it was sort of carrying on with your daily life, you know, amidst the epidemic, and you could say, oh, you know, those are the people at risk. You know, I don't have risky sex. I'm not an IV drug abuser. I haven't had a blood transfusion. I'm exempt. I'll be okay. Right. You know, so, but here,
yes, eventually when we learned more about how the virus was transmitted, sure. But yeah, as you point out, in the beginning, there were more unknowns than knowns, and it was a pretty scary time. But this is, clearly a different situation, and I think much more terrifying in a way.
Indeed. So, you know, your book, Gain Without Pain, The Happiness Handbook for Healthcare Professionals, I guess you're going to be called into action quite a lot to support, you know, the mental health and resilience of healthcare professionals over the next few months. So what's in store for Dr. Greg Hammer? How are you going to minister to their extraordinary psychological needs?
Virtually, I guess, would be the answer. No, I've done quite a number of radio interviews in advance of my book coming out mid-May. I think you can pre-order it on Amazon now. And by the way, I will be donating a sizable portion of the proceeds to COVID relief. But I had been giving a lot of talks around the country and around the world, and now it's virtual, mainly through people like you, I suppose. So it's a really fascinating time for sure.
Well, obviously burnout was a huge issue well before we even contemplated that we'd be here in April of 2020. There's a very high percentage, and you perhaps can cite some of the statistics in terms of burnout among healthcare practitioners, whether nurses or medical doctors or ancillary practitioners. And, you know, what are some of the underlying causes of that?
Sure. Well, burnout, I don't have data with respect to healthcare providers other than physicians. I'm not sure whether those data are out there or not. But, you know, burnout, as we all know, is exhaustion, both emotional and physical exhaustion. And it's related to external and internal stressors and inadequate coping mechanisms and adapting skills. And at any given time, more than half of we physicians have signs of burnout. So it's extremely prevalent. It leads to people leaving medicine, changing careers, or perhaps just changing jobs, hoping the grass is greener on some other side of the street. And unfortunately, it results in things like depersonalization, depression, and even suicide.
Drug
and more than one physician commits suicide on
a lot of substance abuse.
Exactly. Substance abuse. Yes, exactly. And so there's more than one physician suicide every day. Yes, and that was before all of this. So I think the drivers are threefold. I think one is that in medicine, our culture has not been particularly supportive of wellness, especially, I think, in the last decade or so. There's been a crescendo of metrics that we're subjected to in terms of patient satisfaction and other metrics that the administration imposes upon us. And we feel a loss of control over our practice, a loss of autonomy. We're told that we should just be able to endure it or suck it up, as it were. And some of these metrics are really unfair to us. If one has a clinic practice, for example, patient satisfaction is extremely important and it's measured regularly. But the patients are unhappy because we're told to see more patients every hour, and yet we don't have the facilities. We don't have the treatment rooms. We don't have the staff. So patients are waiting, and the waiting area is longer, and they're unhappy about short times that they have face-to-face with a physician. The physician may be facing the computer related to the electronic medical record more than facing the patient. So patients are unhappy, but there's not much we can do about it, and that loss of control and the weight of these metrics is a substantial factor. And then also there are lots of practice inefficiencies that are being imposed on us. As I said, I think inadequate staff, this can be in the operating room, leading to longer turnover times because there aren't the staff to clean the rooms, maybe in the preoperative and postoperative space. But for people in clinics, I think it's especially acute. The electronic medical record, I think, is another one that falls into the second category of practice inefficiency.
Well, you were supposed to speed up and optimize patient care, and yet certainly fallen short of its promise, and especially for older physicians who may not be born into the electronic age, you know, adapting to that environment's been real hard, and a lot of them are just saying, I'm going to quit. I'm getting out of Dodge.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Well, all the changes that are just perpetually being foisted upon us, I think, are difficult to adapt to, and more difficult, as you suggested, for those of us who've been in practice for a bit longer, and probably a combination of reasons for that, including being old dogs, if you were, and if you will, having difficulty learning new tricks. But also, when you're just coming out into medicine now, you kind of accept the ambient circumstances. Mm-hmm. But when you've been working in it for a while and you've seen things kind of decay, it's extremely difficult to accept, for sure. I kind of liken, with regard to the electronic medical record, I kind of was reading a book called Sapiens recently. The author's name is Herbira. Great book.
Wonderful book.
Mm-hmm. He talks a lot about how things have evolved and the downside of innovations that have occurred with our culture. And one example is, excuse me, I don't think that's COVID-19, but I've just been doing more talking than I'm
used to. You're starting to sound like Anthony Fauci here. I mean, I'm getting worried about you.
the author talks about the industrial, the agricultural revolution, which occurred about 12,000 years ago. And prior to that, we were hunters and gatherers, and we worked hard, but we spent a lot of time with our families and our communities. And then we had the great idea of plowing a field and planting the field and building a home. And
all in the name of efficiency.
Stability.
Right? Yeah.
Pardon me?
All in the name of efficiency and productivity.
Exactly. And then we found we were subject to, you know, plowing a field, seeding the field, weeding, harvesting, and subject to conditions beyond our control, such as drought and so on. And the average workday apparently was more like 12 to 15 hours a day. So great advance, but definitely with a downside. And I think that the EMR is somewhat like that, in that sort of inevitable, and it does present significant efficiencies with regard to record keeping and billing and so on. But for most of us, it also represents a significant time sink. And again, for those in the clinic setting, I hear from people that when they go visit their internist or what have you, the doctor is facing the computer more than they're facing the patient. Mm-hmm. And a lot of physicians are taking charts home and working into the night and so on related to that. So it's definitely a double-edged sword, and it's a driver of burnout in addition to those other cultural factors we talked about.
When it comes to burnout, there's also something that's sometimes been referred to as the compassion paradox. Is the very physicians and health practitioners who are the best, the ones who have the most empathy, are most prey to burnout because they internalize the suffering of their patients, which is a wonderful quality because, you know, they're not impervious to their patients' pain, but it actually renders them more vulnerable to the effects of burnout.
Absolutely. And I think that compassion is often linked to self-judgment and self-blame when things don't go well. So, you know, we have this picture of the surgeon who sort of got a big ego and bulletproof and doesn't seem to affect them as much when they have a bad outcome. And then you have the caricature likewise of the very compassionate physician who is just agonizing over every decision. And when outcomes are poor, they blame themselves and it's something they ruminate over. And we have a negativity bias to begin with. So we're disposed to focusing on that which is negative, and mm-hmm. we kind of forget how many patients we've helped and saved mm-hmm. and ruminate over the past and outcomes that haven't been so positive. And I talk about that in the book. I think that's a major characteristic, as you inferred, that causes us to be burnout and eats away at our resilience.
And also, I think a large percentage of physicians are perfectionistic individuals. You know, we were the smart kids. You know, we were taught that an A minus didn't cut it. You know, we always strived for the highest grades, the highest attainment. And then we're faced with an uncertain and chaotic medical environment where sometimes we can't control the outcome, you know, as we did in classrooms and, you know, on, you know, SAT exams. It's different. It's chaotic and disheartening.
Absolutely. I think that's an excellent and very relevant point, Ron. And that goes to, I think, the third category of drivers for burnout beside our culture, our practice inefficiencies, and the last one is resilience. And I think that we've considered resilience as being able to tolerate staying up all night and working the next day, sort of physical resilience, if you will. But where we're not trained to be and haven't embraced resilience in general has to do with exactly the point that you just made. And I think the flip side of that is that's an area where we can make significant progress in terms of our well-being. And that's really my focus, is focusing on our personal resilience and how we can improve it.
Well, let's, in part two, we divide our podcast into two parts. In part two, let's focus on some generalized lessons for people confronting the lockdown of 2020. People stuck at home with uncertain job prospects, perhaps with kids at home. We'll talk a little bit about that because you're a pediatrician. The book is Gain Without Pain, the Happiness Handbook for Healthcare Professionals, but we're going to generalize it to messages for the general populace. What's the effect of stress on our health, on our immune systems? How can we de-stress? What's the best way to keep our children calm? I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, our guest, Dr. Greg Hammer, author of Gain Without Pain, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.